On this episode of The Freenoter, we'll look at getting clear on the goal of your freenote and the three types of talks to achieve that goal.
We'll pay tribute to the true original gangster of freenoting, Aristotle.
And as the snow settles in on our chilly city of Boston, a craft cocktail made just for winter.
All that and more on this week's episode of The Freenoter. So this week, we're going to talk about the goal of your freenote. And
wait, you have to have a goal?
You do, yeah. And I know the Uber goal is get them to sign on the line that is dotted. I'm sure that's what your company would like, or what you're, if you're working for yourself, what you would like. But sometimes that's not the most achievable goal you can have on stage, right?
Absolutely not. And on the other side is the, I just want to go up there and be awesome. I want to deliver a performance.
So I've been speaking for 20 years, and I will freely admit that just going up and being awesome was my goal for probably, well, I'm going to say just the first 19 of those years.
Yeah.
But that does not generate revenue for the company, although it does generate miles of smiles. And
which leads us to a topic probably for a different episode, which is, can you in fact build a personal brand while you build your company's brand at the same time?
Ooh, that's an excellent topic. Would you submit that to thefreenoter@gmail.com?
You know, I just might.
I hope you do, because we read each and every one. So the first thing about achieving a goal for your freenoter is that the word goal does not have an S on the end of it.
That is right. Right, because you really can't serve two masters with your talk. I mean, the more that you try to please everybody or try to accomplish eight things, you're much more likely to accomplish none of those things.
Yeah, and it's not even, it's not just the number of goals that you want to accomplish. It's how far down the path of, you know, from I'm not even thinking about you to I'm sending you repeating revenue that you think you can get in 45 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, it really is the reason why a goal versus multiple goals is so important. First and foremost is that it gives you clarity on not only what the talk is supposed to do, but on how to construct that talk so it accomplishes that thing. Because what you're trying to do with a talk absolutely dictates what I call the shape of the talk. I mean, where you spend your time in the talk. So you, if you try to do three things, then you just get a really misshapen talk.
Well, and this is a great place to bring up a talk that is one of your favorite talks, because I think the goal of the speaker of the, it's a TEDx talk from Joe Smith.
Oh, I love Joe Smith.
And
I think I'm personally responsible for like 6.2 million of his views.
Well, but it's such a great talk to bring up here, because Joe Smith's goal might be to save the world, to save trees, to reduce the use of renewable resources, to, you know, to clean up our air, better hygiene. He might have 1,000 goals.
Right.
But tell us about the goal of his talk, because I think it's a brilliant talk.
It's 4.5 minutes long, and I think it's something like 462 words. So it's like the average length of a short, I mean, it's the length of an average short blog post. But his goal is just to get people to use only one paper towel in the public restroom.
And it changed me forever.
It usually does when people watch it. They're like, oh my gosh. Yeah, because you cannot unhear that talk. You cannot unsee it.
And yeah, I'm not going to give it away, other than to say, when I use the restroom in public somewhere and I have to use a paper towel, I do it the way he does it every time without fail. I stand there in front of the sink and shake my hands 12 times, not 11, not 13.
Yeah. And that's the power of understanding precisely what it is that you want someone to be able to do after your talk, which I think is one of the most powerful questions you can ask yourself as a freenoter. Not just what will it do for me, because that's important, but the better way to frame that to make sure that we're, you know, within our, you know, capital C, capital R, cardinal rule of freenoting, where we're making the usefulness to them as, you know, the equal to or greater than the usefulness to us, is making sure that we're clear on what the talk will empower them to do. And I hear a lot of people, some of my clients, a lot of them come up kind of in the motivational speaker space. And a lot of them just stop. It's just like, well, I want them to feel empowered. And so the question I often follow up with is, empowered to do what?
That's one thing at least I've been clear on for most of my speaking career. I've not had a perfect speaking career, but like I've tried to eat empowerment. I've tried to turn empowerment into a meal, and it provides me no sustenance. Like, I actually need them to do something that involves revenue to my company, not to be cold about it. Like, I want them to feel empowered, but I also want them to feel curious and at least examine the possibility that what my company does might help them achieve their goal.
Right.
Which is a big part of it.
Yeah. So where is it that you see, I mean, so obviously having no goal is a problem if you're a freenoter, but where are some places where either you have seen or you maybe have struggled yourself with around this idea of like, what's the goal of my freenote?
I think early days of my speaking career, my sole goal was not to puke on stage. And
a noble, noble goal.
It is, because, oh, that time in Sheboygan. That poor woman in the front row. No, I've never done that. But I think early on, and by the way, when you're just starting as a speaker, like getting through your talk with some measure of aplomb is an okay goal.
That's a great word.
Isn't it? I know. And today's podcast is brought to you by the word aplomb. Because that's okay as long as, like, when you're done, you're satisfied with having aplombed it. I aplombed the heck out of that.
I aplombed it.
Right. And that's fine. And I will admit, like, early days, like, just getting off stage and getting a chuckle and a smattering of applause made me feel like I did a service, if nothing more than to help 50 people while their time away.
Sometimes survival with aplomb is a goal in and of itself. It, however, does not drive business. So where did you go next?
So the next place I went was, I think I tried to eat the elephant all at once. I think,
yeah, that's
you
common.
Know, and that's a natural tendency, especially again, when your company has sent you someplace and they're looking for, you know, where are your qualified leads? And, you know, and it's sort of, you know, you need to tell them about what it is you sell. And especially like for us, we have a long sales cycle. We have a reasonably high ticket item. I'm not going to be sending people to the back of the room to pick up stacks of $30,000 surveys.
Yeah, that's like the freenoter definition of a Hail Mary pass. It's possible, really freaking unlikely.
Yeah, it's
Doug Flutie. Go.
It's Doug Flutie unlikely. Yeah, exactly. It's immaculate reception unlikely. And so what I realized, I think, not only did I had to have a goal, but my goal, like my reach, could not exceed my grasp, especially with, again, the kind of sales cycle we have. And, you know, if you're just going up there to sell a book, then like having books on the back table, that's an achievable goal. It's not for me, and it may not be for a lot of people. You know, if you're in a lot of different sales kind of disciplines, you're not necessarily going to start taking orders from the stage, and the conference doesn't want that.
No, they do not.
No, that's kind of poison.
But that's an interesting distinction you just made, because it is unreasonable, I think, to set as a goal, as an eat the elephant goal, to say, I want to change someone's life forever. You know, the thing is, you can leave someone with that feeling that they've been changed, but you don't actually know someone's been changed until they actually can do it, which brings me back to that point of what have you empowered them to actually be able to do? What will they be able to do? So you can set a goal of, I want to change somebody's life, but they can't do that unless you've actually given the tools to do that. And to your point, that's hard to do in 45 minutes to 60 minutes. I mean, that is the thing that, you know, ongoing consulting can do. It's the thing that your product or service can do. It's the thing that your book can do. So even if your high level goal is to like change the world or change people's lives, then it's a much more achievable goal to set something that says, okay, but what can I cover in the 45 minutes that I've got? And how do I use that to set up the tool that actually will give them the additional information?
Well, this is something I remember you talking about in a lot of your talks from a few years ago about the no hole.
Yes.
Right. I love that. The no hole. Like, there's the platform you're standing on, and then there's where you want the audience, you know, and the audience is on the other side.
Correct.
And you want them to cross that chasm.
Yes.
And if they're on one side saying, I don't even know I have a problem, and you're on the other side going, I have a $25,000 a year software as a service, like the no hole between those two is like is
very large.
The Marianas Trench or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, like, a no is like that, like, nasty perfume that you get sprayed in a department store where they're like, do you want to try? And you're like, no. And then like, and then you're like, and you cannot get it off.
For you. No. Lady, for you. Lady, for you.
And what happens is, like, that no, like, once you get it in somebody's mind, it doesn't, you can't shake it. You know, and that's the same thing that happens the minute they feel like they're getting sold, or even the minute, to the point you were making, I think, last episode or previous episode about what Tom Asecker, our friend Tom Asecker said about people have to feel confident about crossing that chasm. There's you can't do everything in one talk. You have to take the longer view, particularly with freenoting. But the good news is that your company exists to do the legwork of the day-to-day stuff, of the how of how to actually accomplish that. So, I mean, is it just, you know, the dangers with setting a goal? Is it just not having one and just having one that's too big? I mean, or is there anything else that you've seen or run into?
Well, I think there's a difference between goal and an outcome.
Hmm.
And a goal is, you know, a goal is what I want.
Yeah.
There's a difference, I think, between a goal and an outcome. And the goal is the thing that I have. Yeah. And, you know, maybe that's X number of qualified leads or just inquiries or conversations. That's my goal. But outcomes is what I really need to be looking for. I mean, that's a great healthcare metaphor. I mean, what most modern healthcare organizations and hospitals of quality really care about is outcomes. And to them, outcomes is a percentage drop in fatality or, you know, a percentage increase in quality of life during an illness. And, you know, it's all patient based. And I think the healthiest thing you can do as a speaker is consider what the outcomes are that your audience will be able to attain, whether they attain that with you or not. But hopefully you are set up in such a way that attaining it with you is a solution that makes sense.
Well, and I think a smart freenoter, you know, a savvy one, is actually setting an outcome for their talk, the way that you're defining it, in such a way that it can be measured. Because, you know, there's a big difference between setting a goal of, hey, raise awareness about our business and drive newsletter signups. And you can construct a talk that actually does both, but you're going to actually know that it raised awareness if you actually can see the uptick in your newsletter signups. So I'm a big fan of really defining what are those outcomes, not only for you, because that's how you're going to measure the talk. That's how you're going to be able to go back and say, did it do this thing? Because I can actually go back and look that it did that thing. But also, what are the outcomes for the audience? What is it that has to happen with them in order for you to achieve those outcomes? And I think that's really where some of the deeper thinking about a talk really has to happen.
Yeah. And I think, you know, salespeople outside of giving a talk have a pretty good handle on what, like, the sales funnel is. You know, there's awareness. Are you aware?
Would you consider,
right? Have you made your decision for whatever? It seems like we forget all of that when we get on stage, and it's just like, you know, awareness to close. But just like anything
Hail Mary.
Else, exactly, just like anything else, there's a ladder.
Yeah.
And I think the best that you can achieve on stage is to move people from one rung to the next rung.
Yeah.
And that, first of all, requires a sort of a modesty in what your reach is, but also that you have those rungs defined.
Yeah.
And that you have something for them to do at each rung that moves them along.
Well, I mean, to kind of convert that metaphor back to the one we've been using, I mean, I think it's useful to think of it as a football field, right? Like, where the end zone is where you want them to be, because they score, you score, right? Like, you are the coach, Belichick. But you are the coach and you're trying to get them down the field. You really need to decide, okay, yeah, you want everybody to score, but depending on where your audience is, there's only so much you can do, because any given audience, and this is going to be set up based on a lot of what we were talking about last time, which is how do you describe the talk in the first place, is at a different spot on the field. Some of that audience is already in the red zone. They are ready to move. They are ready to move. And they need different kind of information than people who are 90 yards away, where in order to get to the end zone, it would take a Hail Mary pass to get them there. But you can construct a talk that moves them down the field. And I think what's really powerful as a freenoter, particularly since we want to avoid the new talk every year kind of thing, or new talk for every conference, is to actually have a series of talks that just says, okay, well, if somebody's 90 yards away, how far can I move them? And if they're halfway down the field, how far can I move them? And if they're in the red zone, how can I get them home? I mean, and like, get them to score. I think just metaphorically, that's a really useful way to kind of think about the goals of the talk, is to start with thinking about, where is my audience right now?
Let me ask you this. If we're going to keep with that football metaphor, and let's stipulate that Tom Brady is the greatest speaker, chef, car mechanic, whatever, in the history of everything, do we need, there's 100 yards in a football field. Do we need 100 different talks? Do we need 10 different talks? How many different talks do we need to sort of meet those broad goals, do you think?
I think there's three. And I think there's the first one is that, you know, folks that are, you know, 99 yards away from scoring, there's just this realization that they could score, like just getting them to that idea, mm-hmm. Which is probably moving them maybe 30 yards max. I think there's a midfield talk where people go, I know I can score. I'm not quite sure how. It feels a little far from here. So can you tell me, like, just roughly, like, what the plan is? And then you have people who are like I said, red zone talks, where they're like, I get it. I know what the issue is. I know what the solution is. I just need the details. Just give me the tactics, coach, and I'm going to get there. So I really think of it as kind of like three fundamental talks that way. I mean, how do you see that? Does that resonate for you? How does that match up with what you've seen with the free notes you've given?
Well, I would love to get a little more clarity on exactly what you would call those three talks and how to think of them. I find myself as a freenoter, and as a freenoter, the lot of the freenoter is I think mostly to give breakout sessions and you know, more tactical things than, you know, I mean, any kind of big conference you and I have spoken at, there've been a couple of, like, you know, big paid keynoters, and they're usually, you know, they might be celebrities, or they might be giving like broad motivational talks, something to really set
right,
a stage.
Those are the 99 yard talks. Those are the ones way at the other
end. Way at the other end.
I like to call those why type talks, mm-hmm. because they're the ones that get people to say, oh, why aren't I achieving this goal that I want yet? Or why is this new direction a way to achieve a thing that I wanted, but I had never been thinking of this new direction as a way to do it.
So the kind of talks that I find myself giving are, you know, midfield and red zone talks, I think.
Very typical for freedom.
Yeah. And I think that's pretty typical. I think we already assume that something, some force, maybe not some other speaker, but some other force has already motivated them to either change or be curious and accepting of a change. And so they come to me to find out what are the possibilities of that. Or maybe they're further down the road saying, yeah, I definitely want to do that. What do I do today? How do I do it?
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I don't want to overstate this, because I've given a few kind of broad keynotes in my life, and you've given more than I have. But the lot of the freenoter, I think, is a lot more midfield and closer.
They are. And I think it's a noble pursuit. I mean, because you're the ones that actually get people where they're trying to go. And so I call those midfield talks, what now talks, to your point. These are folks that realize that there's a problem. They realize that there's a worthy goal at the end of it. And they want to say, and they're basically saying, well, what do I need to do now? Or what do I need to understand now? And it is still more of a philosophical understanding. I mean, the folks that are 90 yards away, those Y type talks, they usually don't even have any perception or even conception of the problem as you see it, right? They're just saying, well, how can I make more money? How can I be happier? How can we convert more leads? And they may not understand that it has to do something with, you know, better storytelling or understanding your customers better. But your midfield talk, your what do I need to understand now talk, the what now for short, are the folks who go, you know, I know I need to understand my customer better, because that's the way we're going to make those better conversions. They already get that that's the connection, but they don't really understand high level what to do about that. I mean, how do you see that play out in what you do?
That's kind of where I live in a lot of cases. I don't actually give a lot of the really sort of detailed, what do I do when I go home talks? Because a lot of what I talk about is, I think, more complex than what the average audience member is going to go home and do themselves. So I live in that middle. I want them, I really want them to say, you know what, my next step should be to hire a professional.
Right.
And that's not, you know, when you go to a lot of the kind of marketing conferences that we have been, there are plenty of those, and I'd love to hear what you call these, those kind of red zone talks where like, yeah, I'm in the weeds. I'm already doing this. I need to know what to do next. And that's, I don't typically live there because I'm selling an expertise that I don't necessarily think translates, but
yeah, those are what I call the how type talks. I mean, those are the ones where they understand the problem, they understand the nature of the solution, and they just really want to know how to do it. So as you say, your what now talk is, I need to hire a professional. I love the way that you said that because it sets it up as they could hire a different company other than Edison.
Right.
But you've made the case that this is an important problem. It's something they need to solve, and they can either generate that expertise in-house or leverage it if they have it, or find that expertise somewhere else. And that's the solution that you're giving them. It's a good, like, what now level. The how level talk to that thing, to that example, as you're pointing it out, would be, all right, here's how you would conduct these things. Here's how you would set up this kind of study, or here's how you would set up this kind of inquiry into a customer problem so that you could make better connections, so that you can, you know, make more money or get better conversions. How type talks absolutely are almost exclusively breakout sessions in my experience, or workshops or training. And I find that, you know, when I'm working with folks that kind of midfield what now talk is a really good one to have in your back pocket, because it's usually one that can go either way. Because you can actually give a what now talk as a keynote. And so if you're somebody who has aspirations for being that, and you have a back end business that you have to support, a kind of a what now talk, kind of a midfield talk, is a really good one to have to really work on and put out there, because it allows you to follow up with how talks. It allows you to follow up with breakout sessions or with trainings. And in fact, that's often what I do, freenoting or keynoting. I should say T&E noting or keynoting, which is I will usually package a keynote with a breakout session so that the whole audience gets that, you know, either that why or what now talk. And then in the breakout session, I do the actual tactical piece in front of them. And I think that's an interesting way to think about it, because it allows you to sequence talks and always have something to offer.
I love that thought about sequencing talks. And again, it really, not to belabor the football metaphor, but you do, you know, you have to get down the first part of the field first and then the next part. And so, you know, there are, as you say, I think why talks, what now talks, and how talks. And, you know, part of your just self-awareness as a freenoter is to understand where you best live. And I think for a lot of speakers, if you have, you know, like really hyper tactical products to offer, like workshops, then that's a natural place to have a how talk ready. If you are dealing with an audience that needs a change in mindset before they would even consider what you're doing, that's a good place to have a why talk ready. I mean, I think I sort of live in the what now zone. And you know, if it's a conference that is more specific to what my expertise is, that's a keynote.
Yeah.
And if it's a conference that's not, then it's a breakout session.
Correct. And that's why I'm a big fan of the what now talk. A lot of people just say that there's two types of talks. There's a teaching talk and an inspirational talk. And I'm like, no, actually, you know, coming up as I did and as you have as a freenoter, I'm like, I actually think there's a thing that, you know, depending on the context, just as you said, that kind of middle talk could actually work both ways. And I think that's really important.
So getting back to what we talked about at the very start, like the achievable goal, having clarity on the outcome. What kinds of reasonable outcomes can we expect from a good why talk, a good what now talk, and a good how talk?
So I think a reasonable outcome for a why talk is oftentimes the next talk. I mean, oftentimes they're not ready to do something next. Or sometimes, and this is what I see a lot, if I'm giving a why type talk, is, you know, people will come up to you afterward and say, well, what can we do here? And say, well, that's where you can direct people to deeper information, or that's, you know, sometimes you can take a what now talk and make it a breakout session too, or make it a training session too. So oftentimes an outcome is just, can you lead them to the next piece of content that you have. That to me is actually usually the great way to go, particularly for a freenoter. It's not usually going straight to your product or service. It's going to your next level of content, workshop, training, consulting, whatever that might be. For What Now Talk, again, the same thing. I mean, ideally you want it to sell, training or consulting. I think from any of the talks, you can sell a book at the back end, because the book usually is a how. It's rare that I see people use a keynote to sell a Y-type book, but you can, and then it just leaves people frustrated. I mean, and you can see people have to solve that for themselves. Mm. Like Simon Sinek is who immediately comes to mind. He had a great TED talk that was, how great leaders inspire action. And most people think it's called Start With Why. He wrote a book called Start With Why and pretty much had to follow it up almost immediately with Find Your Why, because he used a Y-type talk to sell a Y-type book. And then everyone was like, well, that's great, but how do I actually do that? And so they had to develop a product to do that, and training. For how, again, that is either, if you're a consultant or a coach or you offer training and workshops, that's where you go. But the result of a how type talk is almost always your product or service, selling that or selling an openness to talk about that, a demo, a conversation, that kind of thing.
Well, that's going to bring us, I think, to the listener email part of the show.
Yes.
Because we got a great question from our friend Chris Moody, and it's very relevant to this discussion. And it's a thing you and I have heard a few times. And sometimes there's some stress around it, let's say, whether it's overtly confrontational or not. And Chris is a good friend, and he's a freenoter. He does a lot of, he's a really skilled marketer, gives a lot of, like I do, more breakout sessions probably than not, but a very skilled marketer. And he asked us, or he mentioned that he's intrigued by the stigma around freenoting versus keynoting, as in paid speakers, right? And it's something that, we've certainly run up against competition. And sometimes, paid keynoters can think that freenoters are taking their jobs, that there's, why would you do this for free? We're getting paid for it. You're devaluing us. I've heard that.
Yeah. And I don't think I fully agree with that. I mean, I think you and I have talked about this. Mm. Hey, let's talk about it now.
That's a good idea. Let's start a podcast.
I think the other thing to address with this question, very beautifully raised by Chris, is that there is such a high premium paid on a paid keynoter that I think that a lot of freenoters kind of languish in this, like, well, shouldn't I get paid? Am I failing if I'm not getting paid? Mm. And so I think those are both interesting things for us to address. But let's talk about the competition piece first.
Yeah, the competition piece kind of fascinates me, and I've heard that, and I'm not gonna name a name here, but I told someone that we both know several months ago about the idea for the show about freenoters, and this person does some paid keynoting, and he said, "Oh, great, there's my competition." And I slapped him.
Metaphorically?
No. With my open hand. No, I didn't. And kind of here's where I landed on this. I just didn't see it. Mm. Here's a great example of last week's listener email was from Kathy McPhillips with Content Marketing World. You and I have both spoken at Content Marketing World, and Content Marketing World has a couple of high profile paid keynotes, and the rest of it is freenoters. It's breakout sessions.
Yeah,
right.
I didn't get paid what Mindy Kaling got paid.
Right, exactly. Like you didn't get paid. Like Mindy Kaling got paid.
I did not get paid.
Yeah, and so it seems as ridiculous for me to complain about not getting paid what Tina Fey got paid as for Tina Fey to say, why didn't I get the gig for your free talk on the power of audio? Right. I mean, they are the two universes just don't mix in a conference like that. I'm not taking anyone's paid job.
Yeah, I love how Jay Baer talks about this. I mean, he talks about kind of like these buckets that he sees meeting professionals try to fill. Like there's like an entertainer bucket. There is a motivation inspiration bucket, and then there's a content bucket. And of course, when you're talking about concurrent and breakout sessions, like the vast majority of that is content. And I love Jay's approach to this, which is that he tries to check two boxes. Like he tries to be, I forget what he calls himself, the world's most
The world's most entertaining marketing speaker,
or something like that. Yeah, it's one of those. But he just try. He does try and succeed at checking two of those boxes at the same time. And so that's my response to anybody who says that there's competition or thinks that there's price erosion from people who are out there, like who, because they have a back end business, they don't necessarily need to charge a higher fee for their keynote. That it's fundamentally two different things. And if that means that each person has to work better or work harder, then I think that's good for everybody. Because it means that the person who's the solo keynote needs to make sure that there's intellectual rigor and there's actual takeaways and outcomes that can happen from the talk. That's actually what it means now. And what it means for the person who primarily has been a content speaker is they have to be at an interest and entertainment and inspirational level that is equal. Because the value has to be the same, whether or not the same amount of money is changing hands. And that means both sides need to work a little bit harder to make sure that they are as strong as they possibly can be.
Chris's topic brings up, I think, a natural segue.
A segue?
Into our real hero of speaking. And this week's real hero of speaking is someone, Tamsin, that you and I have known for years and years and years. Really stretching way back before my school days.
And before our lives.
Yes, because we're talking about Aristotle.
You're dope.
Aristotle. And
OG.
Not the big Aristotle, which is Shaquille O'Neal, believe it or not, but the original Aristotle. And I have
to. What do you even mean by that?
That was one of his nicknames, the big Aristotle.
Why?
Mine is not to ask why.
That doesn't exactly roll off the tongue. That's like Weight Watchers rebranding as WW.
That's one for the blooper reel. But we're talking about the original Aristotle, and not just as a gimmick. I think Aristotle has something to teach us today about the topic that we've been discussing. And I have to come clean here. I used to teach rhetoric at Penn State.
What?
I know. It's among many things that I've lied to you about my past.
No, you've told me about this. And in fact, it is the mark of people that I respect, actually, because not only do you have a background in rhetoric, but so does our good friend, my coach and colleague, Nick Morgan.
I love Nick Morgan.
I do, too.
Very erudite, a very erudite man.
Yes, and he is the kind of speaker coach to the stars, as they say.
And he also learned from Aristotle. We both studied at the cold, dead feet of Aristotle. when I taught rhetoric at Penn State, I mean, there are a number of foundational things. And, you know, one of the principles of rhetoric is that there are three basic appeals you can make. You can make an appeal to ethos, which is to the credibility of the author. You can make an appeal to pathos, which is an appeal to straight emotion. And you can make an appeal to logos, which is logic. And not everybody is receptive to all of those things. And when I would get term papers back from students, they would try to cram everything in there, right? They would try to construct a talk with like every appeal thrown in all at once, some great logical argument made by the most credible person in the world, and they've got your son, you know?
Well, then that sounds like they have a particular set of skills.
They do. But that's not what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is Aristotle's definition of rhetoric, because I think you're going to love this, and it's very germane to what we've been talking about. Rhetoric is the art of seeing the available means of persuasion.
Ah, oh, it's delicious.
Isn't it?
It is. Yes. Because what it speaks to, I think, is very much precisely what we were talking about earlier, which is that being able to see the available means of persuasion means understanding what it is that you're trying to accomplish, understanding who your audience is and where they are right now, and then therefore what is the best and strongest way to close the gap between the two. It's basically what's your game plan. And you know, back to our football metaphor, I mean, it doesn't always make sense to pass. It doesn't always make sense to run. And so you have to choose from the tools that you have available. And I think, you know, obviously, you know, Aristotle set up a great construct with logical, emotional, you know, credibility. And I think just the best speakers, whether they're freenoters or keynoters, are those that really can understand how to shift those different aspects in the service of both the audience and the outcomes that they're looking for.
And also where not to spend cycles. I mean, I gave a free note today. I gave a free note today.
You did.
And I had like a big wind up of an introduction, you know, that my title, all the years I've spent researching audio, you know, the foremost audio researcher. So I'm not going to get up there and have my first 10 slides be, you know, NASCAR logo slides of all my clients. Like, my credibility has been established immediately.
Yes.
So I am not going to spend cycles on ethos.
No. And probably, again, yet another topic for future talk. Where do you need to establish credibility, and how do you do that in the course of a free note? But just really understanding, I think it just comes back to what we're talking about before, is what does the audience need? And fundamentally, that comes down to understanding who your audience is, which just happens to be our topic for next week.
It does. It does happen to be our topic for next week. And you know what else our audience needs?
A cocktail.
I know that we do.
I know we. I have to admit that we already finished the first one.
And don't speak. We have a great cocktail for tonight. It's not one you're going to find in any book. You won't be able to Google it. And I feel confident in sharing it with you because the restaurant from which we learned it sadly is gone.
Oh, and it was my favorite in Boston. So this like makes me so sad. But as they say, as long as it lives on in memory.
And in the glass.
And it's still here. Yes. Well, thank goodness for liquid memory.
It does. There was a fantastic fine dining restaurant here in Boston called L'Espalier. The Michelin Guide does not cover Boston, but if it were to, that's easily a one and potentially two star restaurant. And the chef owner decided it was just a lot of work to get up every day at 5 a.m. and spend 6 hours supreming an orange, I think.
Yes, but we miss it desperately.
We miss it desperately. And for one season, the winter of 1 year, they put a drink on their cocktail menu, and we loved it so much that we, one of us tied up the waiter in the bathroom and demanded that they write down the recipe.
Actually,
for us.
We just asked for it and they gave it, which
yes,
was nice.
That's right.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, serving ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
And it's a cocktail called the Winter of Discontent. And we are sharing it, number one, because winter has struck here in Boston.
And we are discontented.
And that's the number two. Yes, the Winter of Discontent. And it is a brown drink. And I will say, on the one hand, it's a bit of an indulgence. It calls for three ingredients that most home bars don't have. But you balance that by a good old slug of cheap Canadian whiskey.
Nice.
So the Winter of Discontent is 2.5 ounces of Canadian Club.
Which is not a common ingredient. Well, I mean, it could be.
It could be. It's an inexpensive Canadian whiskey.
Yep.
And for as highfalutin as this recipe is, a Canadian Club is required.
For the right balance. I agree.
Yeah. Do not use American whiskey, bourbon, rye, or it will burn your tongue off.
Too hot. Yep.
Way too hot. You want the smoothness and the sweetness. So
Of a Canadian.
Yes. Shout out to Scott and Allison Stratton, who are the smoothest and sweetest Canadians we know. You can get their book, The Jackass Whisperer.
That's right.
This week. So 2.5 ounces of Canadian Club. And then here are the exotic ingredients. 0.5 ounce of B&B, which is Benedictine and brandy.
Pre-mixed for you in the bottle. And by the way, that's just a lovely thing to have around the house anyway, because it's just a nice cordial to have on its own. A shot of that. I mean, you're not taking it as a shot. I mean, you're sipping it because we're adults.
We're adults. Yeah, a little bit of B&B on the rocks is great. And B&B is 50% brandy and 50% liquefied monks. Or whatever Benedictine. But it's some monk-made deliciousness.
We apparently love the monk-made deliciousness.
We do love the monk-made. Yeah. So 0.5 ounce of that. 0.5 ounce of yellow chartreuse.
Speaking of monks,
we've had a couple of drinks with green chartreuse. Yellow chartreuse is not as alcoholic. It's much milder. It's got sort of a faint licorice-y flavor. It's very smooth, and it works really well in this. And then here's the wacky one. 3 dashes of something called falernum, which you can substitute orzat for if you have, but 3 dashes of falernum, which is just a syrup that's almonds and cloves and really just a little bit of flavor in there. So You take the Canadian Club, the B&B, the yellow chartreuse, a couple dashes of Falernum, shake, strain with a twist, and it's brown, it's wintry, it's mellow, it's smooth, and it's delightful and not at all discontentful.
No, it really is. It will remove the discontent from your winter.
It will. So while this may be the winter of our discontent, I'm not discontented with this episode.
Absolutely not, because we have achieved the goals that we set.
We did.
We have found our means of persuasion.
We have. And we have figured out our why, our what now, and our how.
And our pellet.
And our pellet. On the next episode of The Freenoter, we'll delve into the most misunderstood piece of the Freenote equation, the audience.
Wait, we have to think about them?
Some of us do.
And you know someone who does? Sally Hogshead, who is our real hero of speaking next week. She tailors every talk precisely to the people who are in her audience.
And since the next show is all about the audience, we'll look at a real crowd pleaser, the classic champagne cocktail.
All this and more on the next episode of The Freenoter.
Cheers.